The Sight of a Touch or the Scent of a Sound by Morita, 1848, read by Cookie Mom, 6067. Chapter 1. When Spock was born, his father suspected he wouldn't be much of a telepath, not with half-human blood. But to everyone's surprise, his telepathy is powerful and precise. By the time he is 10, he is reading his teacher's minds when they try to read his. Sinking into another's mind is as natural to him as opening his eyes. And he is curious, so curious, always, about the stars, about science, about every mind he encounters. He didn't go to space to meld with new and exciting alien minds, but it's definitely a perk. Melding can be sexual, he knows this, has been trained in control and care for when he is old enough to desire it in that way. But as he grows older, and it does not happen, he resigns himself. It is better, in fact, to simply engage with other minds in innocence, without desire. All minds are of equal interest to him, clever or slow, old or young, familiar or deeply alien. He catalogues them as he does his discoveries. Each one is a learning experience. That was quite an illogical display, says Spock, when they're finally heading away from Rigel 12 and those disturbingly alluring women of Harry Mudd's crew. Not humanity's finest moment, was it, Mr. Spock? Jim agrees, filling a glass. He tilts the bottle slightly toward Spock for etiquette's sake, receives the expected slight head shake, and sets it down. This is the best part of every mission, when he and Spock can sit down and talk through everything before Jim writes his report. He always has helpful insights. I would not include all of humanity in your assessment, Spock counters. I noticed you were not affected in the slightest. Jim gives a rueful grin. Oh, I was affected, all right. Spock blinks. Jim hadn't missed his mocking expression at the rest of the crew, when every male aboard the Enterprise had been practically slavering at those beautiful women's heels. Hopefully those looks, in a human he might even call them sneers, didn't include Jim. At least he'd managed to keep his drool inside his mouth, which is more than some of them had. Captain, Spock says, I had assumed you were immune to the drug's effects, given your professional demeanor was unchanged. Jim picks up his glass, gazes into it with some embarrassment. Look, I couldn't survive as a captain if I couldn't function while surrounded by attractive people. Think about it. Here on the Enterprise, I'm completely single. I can't hit on my subordinates. And yet, a hell of a lot of them are attractive. If I can survive bridge shifts with Roman Rand's bare legs in my face, and your ass pointed at me half the time, he silently adds, I can handle a few chemically enhanced, professionals. I see. In that case, I deeply admire your self-discipline. Hard-earned, Mr. Spock, hard-earned. When I was lieutenant on the Republic, my immediate superior was a Delton. Every time I was in her presence, I was, hard as a rock, highly affected. If I couldn't act like a professional, they'd have transferred me out of that department, and I needed the experience. So I learned to deal with it. I try to focus on the person herself or himself, how they might feel, rather than how I feel about them. What they want helps divert my attention from the merely physical. Spock accepts this with a rather surprised lift of both eyebrows. Perhaps you should take the time to explain your method to the rest of the crew, he suggests. Their behavior was most unprofessional. I don't blame them, says Jim. That was powerful stuff. But you're right that they'll have to learn to do better. Since they're on the topic, Jim has some of his own burning curiosity to satisfy. What about you, Spock? What's your secret? Rigid logical discipline, or does it simply not work on Vulcans? Spock is silent for a moment, considering. At last he says, there are several reasons, any one of which would have been sufficient. First of which is that I have not reached sexual maturity for my species. Jim coughs slightly, sets his glass down. Spock is older than him. He has hair on his chest, his voice is definitely dropped, and yet Jim can almost see it. Something in the awkwardness of Spock's stance, the way he doesn't know where to put his hands, his mocking looks when he sees anybody flirting or kissing, like a boy with a boy's disgust of anything that doesn't suit his interests. Vulcans can live 200 years. What's a Starfleet career to him? Perhaps a brief teenage rebellion before he goes back to his real life and settles down with a nice Vulcan girl. It makes Jim feel very small. The boy's first dog, from whom he learns the lesson that death is real on the doorstep of adulthood. "I," he says awkwardly, "I always assumed you were an adult." "I am, Captain. Not every species matures in the same order as humans do. I am certainly rational and competent, or Starfleet would not have accepted me. In Vulcans, the sexual function is the last to mature, whereas in humans, it is the mind." This comes as something of a relief, though in retrospect it should have been obvious. Spock is a man grown, even if he is a man without a sex drive. Vulcans don't reach that point until this late. "Incorrect, Captain. Vulcans usually attain that point in their late 20s. I, however, due to my hybrid nature, have not attained it, and may never do so. Like the Earth Mule, I am sterile, and it is uncertain to what degree that will affect my further maturation." "Oh." Jim wishes he hadn't asked. Spock's voice is dispassionate as ever, but his mixed heritage has always been a sensitive point. And besides, wouldn't anybody be upset to know they'd never have kids, never fall in love? Jim is upset for him, and it's not even his problem at all. "I'm sorry to hear that." "Do not distress yourself, Captain. Vulcans do not relish the loss of logic such attractions involve. I have always hoped I would be spared. Certainly during this episode, I have not envied the irrational state of the rest of the crew." Jim wants to lecture him about the positive side of sexual attraction, pleasure, love, marriage, but it would seem insensitive, given Spock has made his peace with what he is. "Good that you're happy with your state in life, I suppose." Spock nods. "The acceptance of what is a key part of Vulcan philosophy." He rotates the pad in his hands, unconsciously displaying his long, elegant fingers. Jim averts his eyes guiltily. Spock doesn't want that kind of attention. "Another reason is that Vulcans do not generally experience attraction visually toward the body, but telepathically toward the mind. As I did not touch any of the women or speak to them at length, I have no impression of their minds, and I do not know if the drug would have worked on this pathway at all." Spock set down the pad containing his notes and rises to his feet. "I should not continue to keep you, Captain. The hour is late." Jim fights the urge to leap to his feet, grab his hand, beg him to stay. This is the most intimate conversation they've had in some time. Not an encouraging one when it comes to Jim's secret hopes for their relationship, but still, closeness with his first officer, in whatever way it comes, is always important to him. "Wait," he says. "You said there were several reasons. You mentioned only two." "Two is not several." Spock half turns just before going out the door. "One further reason," he says, as if he were revealing a taste in wine or his favorite color, "is that I am married and have been since the age of 7. And then he is gone. Jim's head sinks into his hands. So, Spock could not possibly be more unavailable or less interested. He wonders if Spock had led the conversation to that topic on purpose, to subtly let him know to cut it out with the flirting. It wouldn't be beyond him. Vulcans love to be oblique. But on the other hand, he never did seem to mind. It's not like Jim has been panting after him, like everyone did after Mudd's women. Just a light touch on the arm, lingering eye contact, a complimentary joke, plausibly deniable stuff. Still, he needs to stop. Spock is not a child, clearly. Just because he's not sexually mature, Vulcans still send their children to university and careers at similar ages to humans. But at the same time, if he's not a sexual being, He can't want that kind of attention. It's unwanted by default. And he's a married man. So even if Spock did finally develop sexual feelings, they wouldn't be for him. He's got some Vulcan lady with a gorgeously sexy mind to do telepathic things with. What does Jim even have to offer compared with that? Vulcans love minds, not bodies. And Jim is completely Cy-null. For a long time, he sits at his desk, rattling the melting ice in his glass, trying to get his head right. If he can only make himself want what he can have. If he can truly see Spock as a friend and be grateful for that friendship. It's a great honor to receive it. He'd rather have Spock's friendship than anybody else's love, and that's a fact. All the same, it's well into gamma shift before he can sleep. Chapter 2. Human puberty, as Spock understands it, is a gradual affair. He was introduced to the concept in his early teens by his mother, since it was uncertain what pathway his growth would take. It is a time of rapid change, but on the scale of years, not days. Sexual feelings grow and make themselves noticed. The young person tests them and discovers their core desires. Pon-Farr is entirely otherwise. Spock had no experience of sexual desire previously, how to live with it, how to restrain it, and now it pours into his mind like a lightning bolt, transforming him, making him radiant and dangerous. He does not want it. Did not want it. Does not want to want it as intensely as he does. His telepathy is enhanced, but disordered. He drowns in the chaotic thoughts and emotions of 400 undisciplined minds. His bond with T'Pring drags him like a leash. Though he plants his feet and refuses to come to heel, he finds himself drawn to her despite himself. But his desire is not only for her. It licks idly at every mind that approaches, spitting out some, craving others. Chapel's mind is discordant with his, like the pull of silk against flaking skin, like the rasp of a nail against a gong. For a brief moment, he wants to make it stop, make her mind stop, to stop the discordance. And then he's terrified of what he has become. There is one mind he craves above all others, but he cannot have it. He knows he cannot. He is a bonded man. He belongs to his wife. And that mind is not for him, was never for him. Never asked to be sampled and licked at and wanted. This mind, too, must stop, or he will devour it whole. He knows that he will. Jim didn't know what he'd been expecting when Spock had said sexual maturity, but it wasn't that. All in one terrifying swoop, Spock has unveiled a whole new side of himself. And it shows even after the Pon-Farr is over. There's a new confidence in Spock's stride, a new intensity in his eyes. Something is different, and Jim likes it. Like embers loaded with fresh fuel, his hope springs up again. If Spock can want sex, then there's a chance Spock will want it with him. But how does one seduce a Vulcan? By being noticeably smart around them? Jim is no slouch, but he can't compete with the way Spock calculates the odds to the 0.1% in half a minute. But he gives his teasing looks across the bridge, and it feels like Spock is returning them, with more heat than before. He leans into Spock's space, and Spock bends into it just a little bit. He squeezes Spock's bicep, his shoulder, his forearm. Spock brushes his fingers, as if by accident, on the arm of the captain's chair. It's hard to read Spock, but it feels like he might possibly be flirting back. After his Pon-Farr, Spock's desire settles into a tamer beast, but it remains, as expected. He has been given the tools to manage it, and he does so. Meditation, control of the body, direction of the thoughts, this burden, this illogic, will be with him for the rest of his life. He had dreaded this, but he finds it manageable. And it surprises him with unexpected pleasures, the way he can not only feel the brush of a fellow mind, but savor it. The way he can roll the memory of a specific aura in his mouth for hours, tasting its flavor long after its owner has departed. He had always known, of course, that Jim's mind was unusually strong, intelligent, dynamic. J- just as one can admire a woman with the same appreciation as a work of art. Sexual desire is not necessary for that. He had once clasped Jim's hand and felt his mind's intensity, a hypersonic vibration of thought and its specific flavor, like oranges, like honey, like the pealing of golden bells. It was admirable, and he had given his trust to it. He had testified to its perfection on more than one occasion. It is not a new revelation to know that Jim's mind is beautiful. But the intense pleasure that mind gives him now, that was what he had not known, had not felt the intense click of compatibility when Jim touches him, when he speaks to him, that the flavor of Jim's mind is so delicious on his tongue. The captain devises a cunning way out of a difficult situation, and Spock is dizzy with it, right on the bridge. The way Jim's mind moves, so unpredictable and alluring. When he swoops his bishop down from the top level to pinion a queen, Spock is instantly hard and has to breathe slow to reestablish control over his own body. There are other minds he lusts over in passing. He does not deny himself the pleasure of tasting them when he has any reasonable excuse. Vulcans are careful about it, not wanting to waken something they can't satisfy. But Spock has discovered a unique interest in being hungry, and he is not afraid of it. But he is careful with Jim's mind because he already craves it, and he isn't sure what might come next, what Jim wants, how much of his mind he wants to give. "Why is it," says Jim one evening, "that you've never melded with me?" Spock blinks, allowing himself for a brief moment to imagine it, pouring into that mind, taking it into himself, brushing against it, tasting it. His hands twitch in his lap, tempted to reach out, to take. "There has never been a reason," says Spock honestly. "You've melded with a suspected psychopath, a rock monster, and a machine," Jim says, a note of petulance in his tone. "It can't be that big a deal." "With you," Spock thinks, "it would be." "There is always a certain amount of risk to both parties," he says instead, "especially given we are different species. Imperfect control on my part could damage you. Or you might panic and entrap me. These things happen." He imagines the intensity and dynamism of Jim's mind. Yes, the whirl of thoughts might indeed catch hold of him, suck him down. It would be very difficult to leave. "You seem to know what you're doing. I would trust you. But of course, I wouldn't want to endanger you. Why do you even desire this?" Jim's eyes are soft, his mouth embarrassed. "Just curious, I suppose. I bet telepathic species have to deal with this all the time, don't you? Psi-null people begging to try something they could never have otherwise." "Fear of the unknown is a more common response," Spock says. "They worry I will see their secrets." "Would you?" "I might, if I chose to." "I would not," he thinks. "Why would I pry you apart when I could make you open for me? I could tempt you to let me down to the very bottom, and you would let me. But it isn't your secrets I want." "I trust you," Jim repeats. The temptation is too great. He doesn't know what he's asking. His eyes, so wide and innocent, doesn't know that under the table, Spock's pants are straining to hold his desire. "Let me show you something a little less invasive." It's a seduction. He does not want to leap into Jim's mind, startle it, overwhelm him. He wants Jim to want it. He wants Jim to ask for it after he knows what it is. He reaches out. Delicately, he brushes his fingers over Jim's side points, spending less than a second on each, moving in a broad circle, rubbing himself gently over Jim's mind. Hot sand, spice in the throat, a violet nebula, sulfur, wind blowing the tears out of his eyes, sweet corn, a single sweet note drawn out on a violin, cut grass, exhilaration, raindrops on his eyelids, torches burning blue in the thin air, receiving a compliment, ice crunching between his teeth. With a gasp, Jim pulls away. What was that? Spock withdraws his hand, returns it to his lap. Jim wants to kick himself. He had only been surprised. He didn't actually want it to stop. It is Kashesta. Spock says quietly, the mind touch. He is breathing a little hard like Jim is, and his eyes are dark and wide. Does it feel the same for you as it does for me? Spock nods. Some of those impressions are mine, some yours. As minds brush against each other, the awareness interprets it this way. Wow. Jim licks his lips. It was really something. If our minds were less compatible, the impressions would have been less pleasant, Spock says. Not tonight, Captain, Spock says gently, rising to his feet. But he lightly touches the back of Jim's hand with his fingers before he goes, and there is suddenly the taste of incense on Jim's tongue. Holy shit, Jim whispers to himself when Spock is gone. And that was the less intimate version. Maybe he isn't ready for a full meld. Just this, and he wants to lie on the floor and hyperventilate for a while. This is a big step. Spock is attracted to minds, he had said, which was why Jim had asked for a meld. His thoughts had been, if Spock could only see his mind, maybe he'd find it sexy. He'd imagined the meld as some kind of first step on a road that would end in his bed, or preferably, at the altar. But now he's thinking he's had it backwards. Spock turned down the meld because it was too much, but he was willing to, what, mind kiss? Mind tease? It's possible that it wasn't sexual at all, just barely possible. Jim wonders if his mind tastes as delicious to Spock as Spock's does to him. Chapter 3. Spock makes the Kashesta a habit with Jim. Not every time they see each other, and not early in any evening. Jim seems to sense he shouldn't ask, but Spock can see his eagerness in the way his eyes follow Spock's fingers, the way his lips part and his breath quickens every time Spock lifts his hand to move a chess piece or pick up a data disk. Wanting is even more pleasing than having, Spock has learned, so he never touches Jim until they have both had their fill of wanting. When he finally reaches out, Jim tips his face upward like a desert flower seeking rain, eyes falling shut. Spock caresses Jim's mind, brushes against it, licks at it, moves to different places, seeking out different flavors. This is only the surface, the senses. But the way Jim senses is unique and fascinating. The taste of caramel, the smell of old books, the gasping cry of an old lover. Spock savors it all, letting Jim taste the shimmer of stars in the heat, the warmth of his mother's palm, the first sight of Vulcan from space. After Jim's face is red, sorry, it does not trouble me, says Spock. Intuiting, he is embarrassed that a sexual thought was transferred. Was that something you wanted to keep private? He knows it isn't, or it wouldn't be stored here. But it's possible Jim wanted to keep it private from him. Well, no, Jim says after a moment. I guess you know I've, been around. You are experienced in matters of the body, Spock says without judgment. But in matters of the mind, it falls to me to guide you. Jim contemplates this moment. It appears he has completed the obvious syllogism, because he steps closer, tips his head back, and kisses Spock lightly once on the mouth. Spock inhales. It is not his first kiss, nor is it as intimate as what they have already done with their minds, but it is his first kiss from Jim, and it is delicious. So begins a slow courtship that reminds Jim of the circling of two predators, both intensely focused on the other, both trying to lead in different ways. The body, Spock had said, is his purview. So Jim pushes gently at the limits of what they do. A light kiss. A slow kiss. Licking Spock's bottom lip. sliding his tongue inside. They are together every evening now, playing chess if they can, working if they must. Some nights, Spock doesn't touch his mind at all, but he allows Jim a kiss before he goes anyway. Some nights, Spock caresses his mind for such a long time that Jim is hard as a rock when they finally part, and he has to carefully hold his groin away when they kiss. He senses that it's vital not to rush Spock at this, that this is the pace Spock wants. Two things are clear. This definitely is sexual to both of them, and they definitely are on a path that is going somewhere. One night, Spock presses slightly deeper into his mind, sharing more complex things. The snap of a book closing as Jim sighs in satisfaction at the end of Great Expectations. The perfect synergy when Spock finally saw the pattern in the numbers that made up the Sokoth warp equation. How they each felt when the Enterprise pulled out of the gravity well it was trapped in, and they knew they would survive after all. After that, Jim pulls him closer and murmurs, "And how do you like my mind, Mr. Spock?" "I find myself fascinated by it," says Spock, as Jim trails a finger from his forehead, down his nose, and over his lips. Jim brings his mouth to where his fingers were, kissing Spock slow and deep. Then he trails kisses down Spock's neck, unfastening the shoulder seam so he can lick at Spock's collarbone. Spock breathes hard, his hands cradling Jim's head, caressing his neck and face. Jim pauses and looks up at him. "Does this do anything for you? Does it turn you on?" "It is difficult to say," says Spock. "I was maximally aroused when you started." "Oh," says Jim. "Should we take things further then?" His hand slides down Spock's chest, down to the waist of his pants. Spock grasps his hand, stopping it. "So impatient," he murmurs. His shields must still be down because Jim tastes juniper berries popping between his teeth. "It's been going on for 2 months when Bones catches on." "I know what you two are getting up to," he says, waving a finger. "I'm not blind and I wasn't born yesterday. So why haven't I had you in for STD panels?" "This may shock you, Bones," says Jim, grinning, "but we're actually not having sex." "You've got to be," argues Bones. "Or why else are both of you always looking so goddamn smug?" "We're courting," Jim says primly. "I don't expect you to understand." No surprise to hear the green-blooded computer needs seducing. "Actually, I think he's seducing me." Chapter 4. Their first real meld is in the line of duty, restoring Kirk to himself, pulling him out of the fantasy where he is Kirok. It hurts. "I see why you didn't want to leap headlong into melding," Jim says that night. He's lying in bed, a damp washcloth over his eyes, though it isn't helping at all. "That was not like what we've done so far." "I'm sorry our first time had to be like this," says Spock, sitting on the edge of the bed beside him. "I was not prepared. You were not yourself, and you panicked and pulled me in with you. I hope you understand that this is atypical." Jim nods, moving the washcloth up to his forehead so he can see. "First times are overrated," he said. "I'm not going to count that one." Spock brushes Jim's cheek with the back of his knuckles. "Purely a bodily touch this time. That is agreeable." Spock's wanting is a constant buzz in the background of his mind. He knows that indulgence in emotion is a slippery slope, leading to disorder and inevitable distress. But he also knows that curiosity is the impetus that drives him. It always has been. It called him out to the stars, so he chooses to give his curiosity a loose rein. It gives him reassurance to know that he can stop at any point, that he can take as long as he chooses. Jim, he comes to understand, is already suffused with wanting. He would have let Spock take him that first night, knocking the chess set off the desk and sprawling him out among the rolling pieces. So the original care with which he started this, fearful to expose himself too far, for fear Jim wouldn't want him in the same way, has long since been proved unnecessary. And yet it is still pleasant to stretch his anticipation out like taffy, thinner and thinner, until the lightest breath makes it quiver. He places his hand on Jim's side points and gently nudges his way inside.
"This is a meld?"
asks Jim. In answer, Spock shows him a vast ocean, deep enough that the bottom is black, full of glowing creatures that thrive under the weight of the entire sea. At the surface, an infinitesimal speck. Amid the vastness is a single swimmer.
"We have put our face under," says Spock.
Tonight, Spock squirms his way into Jim's sexuality, exploring memories, desires, drives, what lust feels like in Jim's body, what emotions overwhelm him after. There's an eagerness in Spock's mind as he explores, as he tastes. Jim can't help but think it's a kind of hint. When they fall into each other's arms afterward, he palms at Spock's groin.
"Can we please? Tonight?
If you like.
What do you like?"
In answer, Spock covers Jim's hand on him with his own, intertwining the fingers, and Jim feels a deep vibration, a tightness in his groin and lower back, a sharpness like a change in the weather. He knows now the flavor of Spock's mind, incense and juniper, and high heat at the back of the throat and the sound of gongs. But this is different. It is the flavor of Spock's lust. Still, he takes his time with Spock, as Spock has been taking his time with him. Each piece of clothing carefully removed, the marble skin beneath it admired. He kneels to take off Spock's boots and step him out of his pants. With two fingers, he lightly strokes upward from ankle to thigh, listening to the hitch in Spock's breath. Then he presses his face against Spock's briefs, exhaling warmth against his hardness. Spock makes no sound, but a tremble runs through his body. Jim looks up. Spock's eyes are hot coals, burning and unblinking. Jim smiles.
"You don't even want this, do you?" he teases, reaching up to circle one olive nipple,
trail his fingers through the hair on Spock's chest.
"I assure you that I do."
"You gonna beg for it, then?"
"I will not."
Spock's eyebrow rises in challenge. The message is clear. He knows perfectly well Jim is less patient than he is, that if it becomes a contest of who can wait the other out, Spock will win. Jim tries anyway. He rubs his thumbs against the jut of Spock's hip bones, against the triangle of muscle from his hips to his groin. His hands slide under Spock's briefs far enough to tangle in the black hair above his cock. Then he stops again, looks up. Spock tilts his head in an attempt at mockery, but the heat in his eyes gives him the lie. He enjoys being teased, but he can't pretend it isn't working. Jim hooks his fingers in Spock's waistband, slides the briefs off. For a moment, he only admires. He'd always known Spock would be beautiful here, like everywhere.
"Do you want me to touch it?"
he asks. "I leave that to your preference," says Spock. His voice is tight. Jim touches the very tip with his thumb, gathering a drop of clear moisture. Eyes locked on Spock's, he brings the thumb to his mouth. Spock's lips part slightly, and he sucks in a breath.
"So you don't care one way or another what I do next," says Jim.
"Not at all."
"That is not precisely what I said," says Spock.
Jim decides to count this as the biggest admission he's going to get tonight. He cups the tip of the green cock in his palm, then slides his hand upward, spreading out the moisture. Spock watches the movements of his fingers with dark, intent eyes. He digs his hands into Jim's hair, and Jim leans forward and takes him in his mouth. His tongue slides along the soft skin, tasting, savoring. Spock's control is unbelievable. He keeps himself perfectly still except for a light shudder or two. The only sound is the catch in his breath. But lest Jim think for a second he isn't enjoying it,
He trails a finger over Jim's side points, lets him feel his hunger, his need, his pleasure. Jim hums against him. He comes with a soft sigh and an explosion of light in Jim's mind, so intense that it almost pulls Jim over the edge as well. When Spock can speak again, he murmurs, "That was more enjoyable even than I had imagined." "You've never had an orgasm before, even?" "I did not want to spoil my appetite." And then Spock releases himself, lunges at Jim, pushes him back towards the bed. His fingers trail everywhere, followed by his lips. "Oh, God, Spock," Jim whispers, as Spock finally unfastens his pants. "I've been dying for this." "I know," says Spock, raising an eyebrow. "Your desperation is very sweet." Long fingers wrap around him, trailing synthetic sparkles of darkness, electricity, lust. Jim doesn't last long. They do their melds, lying down now. Spock says there is still much further to go, but they're deep enough in that Jim loses awareness of his body as Spock leads him down into new areas of his mind each time. Memories, bonds, emotions, humor. The mind, Spock explains, is not the brain, exactly. It exists in the same space, but its geography follows labyrinthine pathways that must be explored slowly. The faint glancing feel of telepathy Jim first experienced is much more intense now. He knows he is touching and being touched, and deeply, too. He can feel Spock move within him, exploring, tasting. There's a tenderness to it, but also a hunger. Spock is savoring him. He isn't looking for anything. He isn't rifling through memories, searching for secrets. It takes Jim a while to understand that what Spock really wants is to know how he thinks, what it feels like to be Jim, how the sky and the grass and the stars look to Jim's eyes, how he remembers them, how his feelings resonate inside his mind. And Jim learns the same about Spock in time. It's hard to exercise a sense he doesn't even have, but there's something about the thoughts from Spock's mind that feels different. Not a scent, and not a flavor, and not a texture, but something like all of those. And when Spock moves within his mind, that scent, flavor, texture rubs against his thoughts, colors his memories. After, Jim rolls on top of him, kissing everywhere, pressing against him. Now that Spock has a taste for sex, he's insatiable, thrusting his tongue into Jim's mouth, squeezing his ass, grinding up against him. He explores Jim's body like he has his mind, prowling around it to know and taste and mark every inch of it. Chapter 5. "Are you ready?" says Spock. "Been ready," says Jim. "You have not," says Spock. "But I think you can take me now." His fingers find their places, and Spock comes in, sliding past lemon peel and flutes, past Abraham Lincoln and 6x12, past first days of school and last days of summer. He burrows into Jim's beliefs, his fears, his desires.
"That's got to be all the way in," says Jim. "It is not."
of the other parts. The part that calls the rest to mind, uses it, dismisses it, chooses what to remember. There is a moment of panic, instinctive, involuntary. Jim hadn't realized that was even there, because it was himself. And if Spock comes there, will there still be a self? Spock waits, breathing gently on the barrier between Jim and Jim's thoughts. There is a sense of safety in him, and Jim uncoils. Spock would not come this far if it were not safe. With an effort, he opens. Spock eases inside, and they are one. They are not thinking at all. The thoughts are outside where they are. They are simply nestled together in a great silence. It is not a permanent overlap. There is a distinction that remains, that will lead each one of them home to the right place. But they have mingled enough that they will never be entirely separate again. A bit of the other will be left in each. Jim can't sustain this for long. His human mind is too easily distracted, reaches out for his words and thoughts and feelings.
This is what a mind belt is?
He demands, indignant, thinking of all the people Spock has touched. Spock eases upward along with him.
Not like this. This I have only done with you.
For a moment after Spock's hand leaves his cheek, Jim can't even move. He thought he would want sex after, but instead he feels like he's just had it. He stares into Spock's eyes, inches from his face, across the pillow. It's hard to believe he once thought that face was inscrutable. Now that he knows what Spock looks like from the inside, he can see that that eyebrow is saying paragraphs, that there's a poem in the crinkle at the corner of his eyes, that the line from his nose to the edge of his mouth is a whole dissertation. He traces the eyebrow, the outer edge of the eye, the mouth, with his first two fingers. That face will never be a mystery to him again. Spock touches his hand, leaving cinnamon and goosebumps. Jim shifts to press fingertip to fingertip, slightly moving one finger at a time against his. Spock's eyes say everything his mouth isn't. Bit by bit, Jim's body wakes up. He's here again in the flesh, and it all seems so much more vivid and real than it ever has. The heat of Spock's room, the whiff of incense, the texture of the red blanket beneath them. When Spock shifts his hand to explore Jim's chest, it sends stars rocketing under his eyelids. He presses himself up against Spock, skin to skin, and for a long moment neither of them moves at all. Just the fact that they are touching is enough. But then the wanting returns, and Jim's hand tightens against Spock's lower back, silently begging. Spock slides against him with agonizing slowness, and it feels like every nerve has multiplied, is sensitized to the smallest movement. The familiar flavor of Spock's mind is all around them, rubbing against Jim's mind with every movement of their bodies. After a while, Jim moves away, afraid it'll all be over too soon. "So now you've been inside me," he says, the first words rasping because it's been so long since either of them has spoken. "I want to return the visit." Spock's mouth very slightly tightens, his version of a glowing smile. "You will have to instruct me on the procedure." Jim reaches down, fingers searching for the right place. "I'll take good care of you." When Jim finally pushes inside, it feels like an echo of that quiet place where they both met in silence, like sense, memory, thought are all somewhere else, and here is only them and this moment. And then Spock rocks his hips beneath him and Jim smiles. "You want something, Mr. Spock?" Spock's dark eyes snap, the taste of his own medicine, and now he's the impatient one. But Jim isn't going to torture him tonight. He moves, long, slow strokes that caress them both, and then, when he finds the right spot, sharper thrusts that force tiny sounds out of Spock at last. Each burst of Spock's pleasure explodes behind Jim's eyes, a different flavor than his own, tasting of Spock's mind that he knows so well. It can't last long. Not like this. Jim reaches between them to grasp Spock's erection, and then they are both falling, tumbling together into light. After they lie sated for a while, Jim's cheek on Spock's chest, mind very lightly brushing mind, it isn't till Jim heaves himself reluctantly to his feet that he realizes Spock's mind is still with him, just the slightest whiff of Spock nestled inside his mind. "That's the bond?" he asks. Spock nods. They had discussed this, but it's a different thing to feel it. Jim hesitates. "I hope you won't be bored with me, now you've seen it all." One eyebrow hikes up. "It has taken your whole lifetime thus far to create your mind as it is now," Spock says. "It would take another lifetime to explore it all." "And you want to?" Spock closes his eyes, opens them, a slow, seductive blink like a cat's. "And I will." The end.